I wanted to point out that Justice Crooks, who is not on the bench, though I know counsel at least were here before, Justice Crooks is participating in the case. He is watching us on Wisconsin Eye, so we can give him a high five over there. He did participate by phone this morning in conference before we began the first argument, and he will participate in the discussion and decision-making afterwards. So though he's not here, as he usually is, sitting in his chair between Justice Ziegler and Justice Abrahamson, he is participating, he is watching, he will hear your arguments, which I assume will be well made. When we talk about arguments, we give counsel 30 minutes aside to use to present their positions to the court. And counsel are very, very good about stopping when the red light goes on, but sometimes the court is not very good. And questions go on and on and on after the red light has gone on. We become concerned that our failure to observe the red light may be unfair to one side or the other. In the interest of fairness, we're going to try to be really good and to, when the red light goes on, to stop our questioning. However, if a justice has asked a question of you and the red light goes on, you certainly may answer the questions. You don't need to ask permission for that. But what we're going to try to do is not to start a new discussion with questions from the court after the red light has gone on. So thank you very much, and we look forward to hearing your arguments. I will call the case of New Richmond News versus City of Richmond, case number 14-1938. Counsel, are you set to go?
We are.
Oh, very good. Please proceed.
Well, just so both of you know, I have to leave at noon today. That is within the hour allotted. I will watch the remainder of the argument on Wisconsin Eye.
Also, when I hear comments about questions, it brings a smile to my face because in the literature, when there is a court, a Supreme Court of a state, a U.S. Supreme Court, or a federal court, when the court is engaged and asks lots of questions, in the literature, it's referred to as a hot court. And that always brings a smile that someone might think of the Wisconsin Supreme Court as a hot court, and I am among the justices. So with that in background,
or hot justices.
No, there's a difference. There's a difference.
All seriousness now, Counselor, you really may proceed.
Thank you.
Thank you very
good,
much.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Remedy Vitar, and I'm pleased to represent the City of New Richmond as the appellant in this matter. And if you wish to have a hot court today, that's perfectly fine with me.
We'll see if I'm hot.
This case is about reasonable expectations of informational privacy. When you submit your personal information or your highly restricted personal information to governmental Department of Motor Vehicles. The issue in this case is whether the City of New Richmond appropriately or properly handled a records request when it took as serious its gatekeeping role to review that records request for motor vehicle records against the Federal Driver's Privacy Protection Act in order to determine whether it could release that personal information. The city specifically requests that this court reverse the St. Croix County Circuit Court decision and specifically find that the City of New Richmond appropriately handled the public records request in this matter. Soon we're going to be on the weekend, right?
No, counsel. Yes, soon it will be. But the act, thanks to the comprehensive briefing of the parties, it seems clear that the Act had a very specific legislative purpose, and that was to prevent stalking, basically. It seems the record indicates, in response to a tragic incident involving the death of an individual. And so with that as its background, it seems to me this is differentiated from the typical sort of generic preemption kind of case. First of all, I guess I would ask if you agree or disagree with that. And then as a follow-up, I would say, what kind of information are you saying should be released and what kind are you saying should not?
Sure, and I'll try to answer both those questions. The first part, I believe you're directing a question based on preemption and supremacy and the supremacy clause, and I don't think there's really any doubt by anybody in this case that the Driver's Privacy Protection Act does apply. The Attorney General, when he issued his informal opinion in 2008, recognized as much that when responding to an open records request, we're going to have to deal with the DPPA. Your second point was that is it applying only to stalkers? Well, that was not Congress's concern. Congress's concern was information, personal information that is in the warehouse or the database of governmental DMVs, and how that information should be maintained private, because one of the repercussions of that is either you can have crime, you can have stalkers or thieves or hoodlums or whoever it might be getting access to that information.
But then it could be misused for illicit purposes.
Correct.
No matter what they are.
Yeah. Correct. So the crime component and the privacy component are so intertwined, it's very difficult to pull them apart. It's really one and the same. The second question you asked is, what information do we believe is considered personal information and what can be disclosed? It's real easy. The DPPA does not have many definitions, but it does have a few. Personal information, any information identifying an individual. That was important language to the Seventh Circuit just a few months ago in the Dahlstrom case, where it said that it could include something like a birth date, which is not specifically listed in the statutory language. But it does include things like your photograph, your social security number, your driver identification number, your telephone number, and obviously medical information, and there's other highly restricted personal information as well. That was what was concerning to Congress. It wasn't necessarily the nature of the record. One of the responses that we hear in this case, well, Congress wasn't talking about motor vehicle records. Fine, big deal. Congress was talking about informational privacy. It was very concerned about this particular personally identifiable information ending up into people's hands if they did not have a lawful purpose for it.
So would it be a fair general statement? I don't know the answer to this. I'm not trying to make a point. That, say, the fact that a motor vehicle accident happened at a certain location on a certain date at a certain time, that would be something that you would say that it would be lawful to disclose, but any kind of identifying information, including the identity of the drivers, including license plate number, whatever else is within the definition, that should be redacted.
That's correct. There's still a lot of information that can be released. But the key component is that information traveling from the Department of Motor Vehicles? So if a police officer stops someone and they're not acquiring that information through the Department of Motor Vehicle and then filling all that information, that personal information or highly restrictive personal information, if all that information is not traveling into the report from the Department of Motor Vehicles, there probably isn't a DPPA problem. But the balance of that report is certainly a public record. The date of the accident, the type of cars, the circumstances of the accident, if there were witnesses there, the road conditions, whatever you have. So there's lots of information they can still gain access to. And that was one of my points earlier. I mean, if this weekend any legislative official, judicial official, executive official, or whether it's a private citizen, an average Joe, or someone who's been the victim of a crime, someone who's been involved in domestic disturbance incidents, if they get in a motor vehicle accident this weekend, it is the expectation of New Richmond News that they are automatically entitled to that full accident report on Monday morning with all of their personal information in it and all of the highly restricted personal information in there as well. And the city believes that that approach takes it too far. The city is specifically asking...
I just want to interrupt you for a moment. As I read the appendix, which is the one you submitted... I'm looking at appendix pages 25 through 37, okay? And I think it's just the last two. The first batch are accident reports. And some information is blacked out. The driver's license number, the operator's last name, the date of birth, the address, the telephone number, is blacked out. Everything else has been given. Is that right? I'm trying to make it concrete as to what information was withheld and what was given to the newspaper. All right. Then when we get to page, let's see, that continues through 35. Then when we get to 36, it is a incident report, and it doesn't deal with a motor vehicle. It deals with the New Richmond Police Department, but they got a the police department got a complaint about a gas fraud. And there, redacted was the complainant and the complainant's address and phone number. And redacted was the suspect, and then something else was redacted, although the victim, which is the corporation here, is put in. And then the last one on page 37 was from the police department, and it deals with, again, gasoline. And I don't know if it deals with that, the preceding one or not. I didn't read it that carefully. But that's what we're talking about. These are examples, right?
These are the examples, correct. Four reports at issue. Two standard motor vehicle accident report. The third is an incident report. There was a fourth report, which I also believe was an incident report, and that was provided without any redaction because the personal information in there did not flow from or travel from the Department of Motor Vehicles. When you look at the redactions in these three reports that are in the appendix, they all appear to redact the specific information that falls within that definition of personal information or highly restricted personal information under the federal DPPA. There's never been any type of argument or concern in this case that the city of New Richmond took it too far and redacted personal information that's not called for within the statute. That was never an issue in the lower court record, not an issue in the decision.
I want to know what provision of the Federal Act are you relying on that allows this redaction? Precisely what provision?
There's two particular provisions. You have subsection A that creates a broad prohibition against anyone who knowingly discloses or otherwise makes available. That's very broad language, or otherwise makes available. The second subsection is subsection B that creates some permitted uses, but it's really also subsection C. Subsection C governs redisclosure. It's specifically within subsection C that the obligations to not produce information, personal information, unless there's a permissible exception, falls to those who, such as a local government. It's the redisclosure section. And I think that's very critical. And that was a subsection that was specifically involved in the Senate decision. There was no dispute in the Seventh Circuit that it was dealing with subsection C, and therefore it took that local village of Palatine directly to subsection B, which said there has to be a permissible purpose. That was also the subsection that was involved in the Spears case before the U.S. Supreme Court. So it's how those three sections work together: the general prohibition, followed by limited, narrow exceptions, and then subsection C, which triggers those obligations to the local municipality. If subsection C was not in there, we may not be here today.
Counsel, you mentioned subsection C and the, you pronounced it Senna, S-E-N-N-E case?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. The Senna case, as I recall, that case did deal with the redisclosure. And after indicating that it dealt with redisclosure, the facts of that case implicated redisclosure, the Seventh Circuit remanded back to the district court for further proceedings, and the district court found no violation, as I understand the briefs here, held the village of Palatine did not violate the DPPA case. So how does that undermine your argument, and if not, why not?
I don't think it does undermine our argument. In fact, I think it actually supports our argument. When it was remanded back, the summary judgment record shows that the police chief offered 7 explanations for why they put the personal information on the parking ticket. And when you look at those 7 explanations, and they're discussed in what I'll call Senna Roman numeral 2, the case that just came down a few months ago, all of those 7 explanations relate to crime fighting. None of those explanations relate to disclosing that information because it's a public record. And again, all of those explanations are within the opinion.
And this was the parking ticket case.
Correct.
In Palatine.
And just very briefly, there's Senna 1 from 2 years ago, which kind of started the reanalysis of what a local government should be doing with this personal information. And then there's what I'll call Senna Roman numeral 2 that came down just a few months ago. And the Seventh Circuit did not backtrack. I mean, I think that's the other important point of the second Senna decision. They did not backtrack and say, we didn't mean what we were talking about. We didn't think that the federal prohibition is as broad. They put the pedal down. And they said this stuff is strictly prohibited from being released unless there is a permissible exception. And the key in that case, the permissible exceptions in that case, they did relate to the exception B1 for agency function, but each one of those 7 explanations was crime fighting, something to do with police law and order, serving the public. None of those dealt with the public records law. The court then goes on, Judge Posner, who actually dissented in the first decision, he writes the majority opinion in Senna Roman numeral 2, and he puts the pedal down, and he says if they had just released this information willy-nilly on the Internet or in some other public way, there would have been a violation of the public records law. And what they're asking for, what New Richmond is asking for in this case, is that there is no limiting principle whatsoever to the news or the media's or anybody's request to get personal information. They look at subsection B1 involving the agency function, and they say that's a gaping loophole. It is not a gaping loophole. You look at the congressional record. You look at Senna. You look at the U.S. Supreme Court decision, which just...
Counsel, I'm interested in hearing your response. At pages 16 through 17 of the red brief, your opposing counsel points to section of Wisconsin law. We started this conversation by talking about traffic accidents. And your opposing counsel points to section 346.70 of the WISSTATS. I see you looking for it, but I'm sure you're familiar with it, and I'm going to read the pertinent part. If you want to keep digging, you can, but I think you're going to be able to address it without having it in front of you. And that's the law that requires law enforcement departments to forward to the Department of Transportation within 10 days of the vehicular accident, the accident report that would have been produced by law enforcement as a result of that. And then consequently, the law says that any person may, with proper care, during office hours and subject to such orders, I'm sure you're familiar with this, the person may get a copy of the accident report. I'm unfamiliar with the procedures of how a person would present themselves at the department and how this would actually work out. Does a person have to personally appear? Can they make a telephone call? Can they email a request? And then if they do make the request properly, to use the phrase that's in there, do they get the whole unredacted report? And if so, does this? What is your response to the argument that none of the information or law enforcement should just disclose in response to an open records request all of the information in the traffic accident report, including the report itself, because a person can just get it anyway?
I'll start with the last point, get it anyway. Look at the decision from the Federal Court of Northern District of Illinois, the Whitaker decision, which we cite in our briefing. Such an argument was made. Well, in this modern age, with Facebook and everything else, you can get personal information. Certainly Congress didn't anticipate that. Nobody anticipated Facebook in 1994. But that doesn't mean that we ignore a federal law It's up to Congress. If Congress doesn't think that in this current day and age this information is still out there anyways, then it's up for Congress to create more exceptions or redact the law or what have you. But I think as we all know and have experienced, either ourselves, friends we know, or we just hear in the media, there's lots of concerns with identity theft, privacy, and the like. So I don't think the federal DPPA is going anywhere. In terms of what are the procedures at the DOT, that's interesting. You could probably go in person, of course. You could probably call. You might even be able to email. But if you go to the DOT, if you just Google DOT, Wisconsin DOT, and DPPA, the first thing that's going to come up is a web page that talks about how serious the Department of Transportation takes personal information. And if you want a report from the DOT, you have to fill out a form. And what does that form require you to do? It lists all of the exemptions under the DPPA, all 14 of them. And then it says at the bottom, I certify, I swear to tell the truth, that I have a lawful need for this information, that I'm going to use the information for this particular purpose, and they sign off on it.
Counsel? Oh, I'm sorry, are you done answering, Justice?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I'll try and go back to 346.70. But
go ahead, finish.
There was a question about 346.70. You know, that was passed as part of the rules of the road back in the 60s or 70s. And that was passed, obviously, well before the Driver's Privacy Protection Act. If you look at a case called
sure.
Young.
The only reason I was asking about that was to get to
okay.
the request. So please, I don't want to take up more time. So.
But I think it's important when you look at that language, because they make it a big argument, is that these are records that have to be produced under 346.7. Well, no. The statutory language says it may. So first of all, we know it's discretionary.
What subsection is that that you're reading?
346.70, sub 4, sub F. That these reports may. So first we have a discretionary word. It's not mandatory. And then it says with proper care. That's got to mean something. In the position of the city of New Richmond, it's our belief that that means that a custodian has to consider, is there personal information that might need to be redacted? And then it says subject to such orders or regulations. Again, I think a custodian can say part of our regulations or orders is that we're going to exercise our duty to consider whether there's a federal basis not to provide this information. And after all, the open record, the city has no problem with the idea of open government and sunshine coming into the government halls.
That's
the concern,
where I want to come in. I want to ask you, is Wisconsin unique in having an open records law? Are we kind of one of 50 out there?
Not at all. Every state has some form of it, or they follow or incorporate the Freedom of Information Act.
Well, if the open records law were to trump the DPPA, what would be left of the federal law? You know, if that's an exception.
Correct. There would be nothing left.
So should we try to read these laws consistent with each other, or has every state essentially created an exception to the DPPA?
No. You know, there's within the record here, we certainly do not have a lot of factual information or even legal sites as to what every 50 state is doing, but they can be read together.
Is there a difference between disclosing a document and disclosing information that might be within that document? I think of, for example, we don't have the DPPA, but this court, even very recently, has gone to great lengths to try to protect victims' names and things that in years previous were in opinions and decisions many, 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 over and over and over. Now we're trying to take a cognizant effort to make sure we don't disclose information that could be personal in that regard. And people come to us, and there's always a balancing on the circuit court's website, what should and shouldn't. Now, that's different, because that's a public document that's in the public domain. But I'm trying to figure out what the balance is, if there is one. And do you think the difference between information and documents has any place in this analysis?
As to the latter point, it's about information. It's not necessarily the document that it's in. And when you look at that Whitaker case I talked about before, it's not just about the particular nature of the document. It's about the information, the personal information. Is there a way to balance this? Yes, there is. When a records requester comes in, unlike New Richmond in this case, they come in and they say, this is the exception that I fall under. This is the explanation for why I want this information. This is how it fits within the explanation or within the exception. It doesn't need to be a long-winded explanation, but it needs to be some kind of explanation. And once that explanation is offered, once that exception is triggered, and again, they have a criminal, there's criminal sanctions if they're lying about it or misusing the information they get. But once that exception is determined, then the information can be released unless there's some really unique circumstances in the matter. But this court has been concerned with privacy in the past. You were concerned about it in the Shill case, private information and emails. You were concerned about it in the Osborne versus Board of Regents case, which involved the Federal Education Act, which in a lot of ways operates similar, well, maybe not similarly, but it's the same structure and the same intent as the DPPA to safeguard personal information in educational records. So it's not unheard of for this court to look for that balancing and to try and protect privacy. It's also not unheard of for a records requester to expect the custodian to pay attention to federal laws, whether it's the education law, whether it's HIPAA, or whether it's the Driver's Privacy Protection Act.
Counsel, for about 3 years I served as an assistant city attorney prosecuting municipal cases and stuff. One of the things, and that sends a shiver down my spine in this, is looking at these records that you're redacting and thinking of the, thank goodness, very few occasions where I was approached to keep names out of the public purview, you know, either by local officials or people of perceived importance in the community. And this seems to be at least an equal opportunity. Everyone's name is kept out. But it raises a specter to me. Tell me why I shouldn't be concerned that information that might be important to the public is now going to be no longer important, no longer available.
Because there's 14 exceptions. There's 14 ways to get this information. You just have to offer that explanation as to which exception you fall under. So using your example of being a municipal prosecutor, that is all going to fall under subsection 4 for use in connection with any civil criminal administrative type proceeding.
Oh, no. It's not. They weren't concerned about me doing my job. They were concerned about, hey, let's keep this quiet. The public doesn't need to know what's going on. That's the concern. To help me facilitate my job.
The requester can look at other exceptions as well. There's the B2 exception dealing with motor vehicle safety. If the purpose of getting that information is to do some analysis of motor vehicle or driver safety type issues, then that's the basis for the disclosure. There's also B14 dealing with any other use specifically authorized under the state of Wisconsin if such use is related to the operating of a motor vehicle or public safety. So there's ways to get this information and still disclose it, but it cannot be an unfettered carte blanche access to all personal information and highly restricted personal information without offering any explanation whatsoever. I see that my time is up.
If you were writing the decision, what rule would you propose that this court adopt in interpreting the federal act and interpreting the open records law? I gather those are the two that are involved here. So what's the rule of law that should come out of this case? You obviously don't like the circuit court's decision, which is in the appendix, but what rule do you want?
We're asking this court to allow custodians and allow the open records law to reflect a restrained approach to the balancing of the obligations under the Driver's Privacy Protection Act. In this case, you have to remember they did not want to offer any reason, any permissible use as to what they wanted the information for. It was just a pure argument that we're entitled to everything. We don't have to offer any explanation. And if we do, we're going to look at subsection B1 and just say, oh, the open records law is a function of government. And so we're looking for that more restrained approach that was followed by the federal courts, looking at the structure, looking at the history. We think that's what needs to occur in these cases.
Do you read Senna then as making that a balanced approach?
I think it does.
decision that
way? I think it does, because it puts the burdens on records custodians to consider, why are you releasing this information? Or in that case, the police chief, why are you putting this information on a speeding ticket? If that explanation can be offered under one of the exceptions, there should be no problem.
Well, I found it interesting in the last paragraph of Posner's opinion was that, one, as I understood the first case, if you put the parking ticket face down on the outside of the car, that was a release of information. And then they said, well, prohibited information released. And then in the second case, they say that it's okay what happened here. But then it says, have the village been making the information on parking tickets publicly available over the internet or placed on? Well, the information was highly sensitive, like the Social Security, the risk of a non-trivial invasion, which they viewed as the parking ticket face down, would be much greater and probably outweigh the benefits to law enforcement. So they were making a balance here.
That's correct. And they were warning that the carte blanche release of this information, whether it's on the internet or what have you, is going to be problematic under the federal law. And that's precisely what New Richmond wants here. Before Senate came down, it was not uncommon for some police departments to put this information in the lobby. It could be in a binder. It could be on a computer. Judge Posner has a clear problem with that, and that's where New Richmond wants to take us back.
Well, is there enough of a record here to deal with the ultimate, or does the court have to send it back to the trial court to make a balance?
I think the record is fairly straightforward and simple. There's never really been any disputes about what's in the record. I don't think it needs to be remanded for any factual findings. We need some legal determinations as to what a records custodian should do when receiving an open records request for this. Should they be considering the Driver's Privacy Protection Act and all its exceptions or not?
Right. Thank you.
Good morning, members of the court. May it please the court. I am Robert Dreps, and with my colleague, Dustin Brown, we represent the New Richmond News and its publisher, Stephen Zube, who's present here this morning. We believe the principles of federalism, the Constitution's allocation of powers between the state and federal governments, provides the key to resolving the dispute in this case. The states have traditionally had power over whether or not police records are made public. Nobody disputes that the records at issue here would be public, including the names and addresses included on them, but for the Driver Privacy Protection Act. The city and its supporters contend that Congress intended the DPPA to preempt that state authority and that they are bound by the Constitution's Supremacy Clause to honor that intent. Nobody here is arguing that local authorities or the state government should ignore federal law. Plain fact is the DPPA does not cover either or any of the records at issue here.
So you're agreeing the DPPA preempts, but you're saying there's something in the statute that allows the state to do what it wants to do in this case, or what it doesn't want to do in this case.
Well, the state is bound by the state law that requires disclosure of these, because the federal law does not preempt that.
Doesn't it authorize state law to be governed?
DPPA was expressly and directly addressed to a narrow problem. Public access to motor vehicle records held by state departments of motor vehicles by presenting nothing more than a license plate number. Who owns this car? Used to be a valid question somebody could present to most DMVs in the country. Pay a quarter, a dollar, and get back personal information about the owner of a car that you didn't have before that. The Congress was also concerned, and And that was the stalking aspect of the statute they were trying to foreclose. Congress was also concerned that states were selling bulk lists of motor vehicle records to direct marketers and others with an interest in contacting these people. The record shows the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Reno versus Condon noted that Wisconsin, at that time, earned $8 million a year selling these lists. That's the kind of privacy that Congress was concerned about. Now, there is a category of highly restricted information at issue in the DPPA because motor vehicle departments require detailed information like social security numbers and even medical information. But there is no highly restricted information at issue in this case. Wisconsin's forms for motor vehicle citations and accident reports do not contain any of that type of information. No photographs, no social security numbers, nothing the DPPA defines as highly restrictive. So it's pointless to discuss that here.
What about addresses?
This case is about names and addresses.
Okay.
That's not highly private information. There are many sources from which names and addresses can be derived from government records. The U.S. Supreme Court has been very clear that the federal government's awesome power to preempt state authority using the Commerce Clause must be tempered by at least requiring that Congress be clear and manifest about its intention to preempt the historic powers of the states. This court has recognized that analysis of preemption claims like the city's here begins with a strong presumption that Congress does not intend to supplant state law. The city has not overcome that presumption. It's not even close. The newspaper does not dispute that the Congress was clear and manifest about its intent to supplant state laws allowing public access to motor vehicle records held by state DMVs. The DPPA's prohibition expressly extends to every state department of motor vehicles, and motor vehicle record is one of only five statutory definitions. The city and its supporters necessarily contend the DPPA is equally clear and manifest about Congress' intent to supplant states' traditional power over access to routine police reports. So how can it be that the city did not discover that clear and manifest intent for nearly 20 years? And how can it be that Wisconsin appears to be the only state where that interpretation, this new interpretation, is being applied? This is a question of federal law. On a question of federal law, the state...
What federal provision are you relying on that says that the name and address and telephone number don't, that they are open and public and not private? What particular part of the DPPA are you relying on?
Well, we're not relying on the DPPA as a grant of authority to provide that access. Some states do not provide access to their citizens to accident reports unless you were involved in the accident. That used to be the law in Wisconsin until 1965, and that's when Section 346.70 sub 4F was added to make clear that any person can see an accident report. 10 years later, it was expanded to make clear that included supplemental reports, photographs, diagrams, witness statements, the whole nine yards. That is an issue of state authority and state policy that Congress did not intend to interfere with. The language Congress chose shows it did not intend the DPPA to supersede that state authority. Congress understood that law enforcement agencies routinely use DMV records to verify identities. That's why they are expressly named. Law enforcement agencies are expressly named in the agency function exception. But Congress did not include law enforcement agencies in the DPPA's prohibition section, as it did state departments of motor vehicles. Likewise, the prohibition expressly applies to motor vehicle records, but it mentions none of the records law enforcement agencies use DMV records to produce.
Opposing counsel said that may be true, the argument you're making, but we have subsection C, which talks about redisclosure. Would you address that, please?
Sure. The redisclosure provision applies. It's not unlimited. It extends, by its express terms, it extends only to an authorized recipient of personal information. That means an authorized recipient of personal information from the DMV. The U.S. Supreme Court summarized that provision in Marrakesh. Each distinct disclosure or use of personal information acquired from a state DMV, the court said, must be permitted by the DPPA. When pursuant to a lawful law enforcement function, like writing out a speeding ticket, issuing a parking ticket, or writing an accident report, that information is translated from motor vehicle records into a record of the official action of the police, the DPPA no longer forbids its disclosure. The police have a right under the functions clause, the exception for law enforcement functions, to obtain that information, and it is also a valid law enforcement function to disclose that information under state law because Congress did not preempt that authority.
Under 2721B1, is that what you're talking about now? DPPA's exception authorizing disclosure for, quote, use by any government agency, including any court or law enforcement agency, in carrying out its functions.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right. I have a question about that.
Good.
Thank you. Isn't this, let me put the question this way. As I read the Attorney General's opinion in 2008, when the opinion came down, he relies on 2721B1. And as he sets it forth in that AG opinion, and as I read your letter of April 29 relating to Senna, your position is that if a government agency, including law enforcement, which is the police right here, or any court, gets information to carry out its functions, it can release it. Is that what the AG said? Pardon me?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear it. That can be redisclosed?
I said if a government agency, a law enforcement agency, gets information, it's authorized to disclose that if it got that information in carrying out its functions. I'm quoting from your letter, DPPA's exception, authorizing disclosure. That's what you're saying here, that the city is authorized to disclose the parking ticket or an accident report, because it's using that information to carry out its functions. That's very, very broad. Is that what the AG said, and is that what you're saying?
That is what the AG said, and that is what I'm saying. But before I get to the exception, it's my position, and I think the Attorney General agrees with that, that the accident reports, information on the accident reports isn't subject to the DPPA in the first place.
Why not?
The definition of personal information specifically excludes information about accidents, moving violations, and driver's status.
Counselor, where do you get that from? Because I'm looking at 18, 27, 25, subsection 3. Is that what you're relying on?
That's correct. It defines personal information to include anything that identifies an individual, including an individual's photograph, social security number, driver identification number, name, address, not the zip code, telephone number, and medical or disability information, but does not include information on vehicular accidents, driving violations, or driver's status.
So you're interpreting that if the information you want is contained with or within an accident report, you get it. You interpret the words information, does not include information on vehicular accidents, driving violations, and driver status. So it's the word on that you're relying on, saying once they put it on such a report, then it's fair game? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I would say it a little differently, I think.
Okay.
Let me try.
Go ahead.
I think plain English requires this statutory exception to be interpreted by reference to the definition that precedes it. The words Congress chose, does not include, indicate an intent to create an exception to what those words follow, to what would otherwise be covered. So in other words, this can only mean that Congress intended identifying information like names and addresses may be disclosed when they are incorporated into records about vehicular accidents, driving violations, and driver status. Mm-hmm. The city's position makes no sense in the context of this statutory language. They contend it was intended only to authorize disclosure of information about accidents, like where they occur and the types of cars involved.
They interpret the phrase, the word on means something different to them. They interpret the phrase as talking about the facts and circumstances of an accident or a driving violation or the driver's status. So they say, well, we gave that information. So they say this is a different class of information than the information you want. And you say, oh, no, once it's in these reports, we get the report, and we get the report including the information, right?
That's an awful lot of weight to put on the word odd.
Yeah, no, I understand, but you do interpret the statute differently.
My point is that information about where an accident occurred would not possibly be excluded under this statute, even if that exception did not exist. It's not within the definition of personal information in the first place. Doesn't the exclusion have to relate to the definition it follows?
And when you say, doesn't it have to relate to the definition it follows, you're specifically referring to what words?
Well, the definition includes all of these categories of personal information, but does not include any of those categories of information when they appear on vehicular accidents, records of vehicular accidents, driving violations, or driver status. We have to give effect to these words. How can someone determine a driver's status without learning or using that person's name? If I go in and ask the DMV for records about Justice Bradley's driver's status, I don't think this statute prohibits them from giving it to me.
Well, let's look at the statute. And I said about words, and then you gave... You were not specific in your response. Personal information, and I'm looking now at sub 3, exactly what was being discussed. Personal information means information that identifies an individual, right?
Mm-hmm.
And including an individual's photograph, social security number, driver ID number, name, address, but not the 5-digit zip code, telephone number, and medical or disability information, but does not include information on vehicular accidents, driving violations, and driver status. I used, when you were talking about this definition that precedes the phrase you were focusing, but does not include information on vehicular accidents, everything else in sub 3 you're talking about, or what are you talking about?
It does not include that information if it appears in an accident report or in a moving citation, a driving violation,
you're adding the word that information. That doesn't appear.
And what you are reading this is, but does not include personal information on vehicular accidents, driving violations. Isn't that how you're reading
this? That's correct, Your Honor.
You're adding the words personal, you're adding that information. Right.
And if it didn't relate back to that information, why would it be appended to the definition of personal information? There's no need for an exception to allow disclosure of information about where an accident occurred. It's not otherwise covered. It's not mentioned anywhere. That addresses the accident report. We also believe the incident report is not covered because there's nothing in the DPPA that suggests it's intended to address information that's merely verified with the DMV. That information wasn't obtained from the DMV. It was verified with the DMV by someone who already had it. The incident report at issue here states by its express terms how they obtained the personal information included there before it was verified. They interviewed the station manager. They used overhead video to identify the car that drove off without paying for gas. And that's how they developed this information. So verification, as some of the Attorney General opinions that were cited in the various amicus briefs conclude, verification has never been intended to be covered by this. But even if we accept that these records are within, we ignore the personal information, we extend the DPPA to include verification, the exception for routine police functions is very broad. You can construe it as narrowly as you like, but functions is still a very broad term. In Senna, there was no statute that required them to include all of that personal information on a parking ticket. There was, like, height and weight. There was certainly no statute that required them to serve the parking ticket that way. So if the DPPA treats that as a disclosure, it's a voluntary disclosure that the police made for their own law enforcement purposes. And the statute is broad enough to allow that. That is their legitimate function. But they had to prove that it actually served that function by going back to the district court and analyzing their reasons for including that information, none of which, by the way, included crime prevention. This was about getting people to pay their tickets when they're issued, not anything to do with crime. But the point is that – lost my point.
Well, then, could I ask a question?
Yes, please do.
There was a very serious automobile accident involving a Saturday Night Live comedian named Tracy Morgan. Didn't happen in Wisconsin. Let's say that accident had happened in Wisconsin. Is there any information that would have gone on an accident report that you think should not have been made public?
Well, if that accident occurred in Wisconsin, the standard form would include the name and address of any victim, or I don't know if Mr. Morgan was the driver, but his name and address would be on that report if he was injured in that accident. And we believe that is a public record in Wisconsin. State law says it is. Any person can see any accident report. We don't think the DPPA was ever intended to prevent that. The definition of personal information, as we just went through, excludes information about accidents. We think that applies to the whole report, including the names and addresses. But even if it doesn't...
Is his home address and his telephone number?
Telephone number, I don't have a big concern about. If they took it out under the common law balancing test, as Wisconsin's public records law would allow, I would never recommend a client fight that. That's personal information. But names and addresses, something as ubiquitous as that, Congress simply didn't intend to guarantee drivers absolute privacy. It cannot. Use the example the municipal insurers had in their brief.
In this case, Mr. Morgan was the victim in an automobile accident. And so you're saying that anyone who is a victim is subject to having his or her personal address revealed to anyone who uses the open records law?
That is and has been the law in this state for decades. If that's been a problem, why didn't our legislature address it? Congress didn't intend to address that. This isn't addressed to accident reports. It's addressed to a specific harm, being able to go in with a license plate number and say, who owns that car? Getting bulk lists of thousands and thousands of names with personal information and using it to send direct mail or other solicitations to those people. Those were the two narrow harms this statute was intended at. It was never intended to be a huge, comprehensive privacy statute. If that were the intent, why has it not been discovered for 20 years? And why is the Wisconsin the only state where this is happening? On a question of federal law, the cheese should not stand alone.
Oh, boy. Did you rehearse that?
Of course I did.
Yeah. Good for you. Yeah, you delivered it. Good for you.
Straightforward preemption law. Is that intent clear and manifest in the statute? How could it be if it went unnoticed for 20 years? There were numerous challenges to this statute when it went up. 10th Amendment challenges by the state saying, this imposes unreasonable burdens on us. What were the burdens they talked about? The burden on DMV employees to have to understand and process this federal law. Surely that argument would have been more compelling if they could have said every law enforcement agency in every small town in every state is going to have to learn the DPPA in order to decide whether or not a routine police report can be disclosed to the public. a name on a routine police report. I would have expected law enforcement officials to be at my side on this case. Maybe they are, because without names, they can't prove that they are fairly enforcing the laws. And how are we to respect our law enforcement officials if they can't demonstrate that the law applies equally to the son of the mayor as it does to the son of the teacher or factory worker?
What's the difference between the statutory definition of personal information and highly restricted personal information?
The highly restricted information is included within the definition of personal information. It's a subset of it. And that is entitled to greater protection because of its sensitivity.
Okay, and what is that?
The driver's photograph. I'm not sure what the particular concern was with that. Social Security numbers can be used for identity theft, of course. And medical or disability information has always been protected from just general public disclosure.
I'm reading from the AG's amicus brief. And it says that if the requested information, and I'm on page 4, it says if the requested information isn't personal or highly restricted, DPA doesn't limit it, the federal. Okay. If the information meets the statutory definition of personal information, and that would be address, right?
Yes.
Okay. And was obtained from a state DMV. And that's this, right?
Well, no. I don't think this is.
Okay.
New Richmond Police obtained it from the DMV.
Right.
We obtained it, or tried to obtain it, from the New Richmond Police.
Okay. So, but it was indirectly obtained from the state DMV then,
yes.
Right?
The police put the information from the DMV onto the report.
All right. So the question is, maybe it doesn't fall within the federal law at all because you didn't get it from a state DMV, but the argument would be that's where it came from. All right. The information may be used for permissible use under AT, that's highly restricted information, and 2721B for personal information. And then it goes on to say that under B1, and this is one you relied on, for both personal information and highly restricted information, is the permissible use by any government agency, that's the New Richmond Police.
That's right.
Including any court or law enforcement agency, in carrying out its functions. Okay. And then, this is the kicker for me. The AG says, responding to public record request is a required function of law enforcement agency. So that since the City of Richmond Police has to fulfill public records requests, then isn't your argument that anything that the Richmond Police puts out doesn't fall within the federal act?
I think disclosure pursuant to a law, to a public records request, is a lawful duty of the police. It is a legitimate law enforcement function. It is certainly within the scope of that exception.
Right.
The
Attorney General is exactly right.
It requires, at a minimum, that it includes the statutory duties of the police.
Mm-hmm.
The disclosures at issue in Senn, I got my thought back, were voluntary. No statute required them to write a parking ticket that way or to serve it that way. They had law enforcement reasons for doing it, the court ultimately concluded, but they had to justify those reasons in court. Here, it's a statutory duty for the police to disclose the report. How can that not be a legitimate function? If they can do it for their own reasons without any legal command, then surely they can do it when there is a legal command. Congress did not intend to tell the state it can't treat accident reports as public information. They would have done it directly. They would have mentioned law enforcement agencies in the prohibition. They would have listed accident reports among the records that can't be disclosed. They knew perfectly well law enforcement agencies use DMV records to verify information or to fill out accident reports. It's common knowledge.
Okay. the AG's position is, even if it comes under the open records law, and it's in a state DMV, then this personal information has to be released unless the public records balancing test or statutory prohibitions other than DPPA preclude disclosure. So you still need a balancing test, according to the AG's office. Do you agree with that?
I agree with the way the AG presented that. Mm-hmm. What he's saying is that the balancing test that has always applied under our public records law mm-hmm. still applies.
All right.
It still applies to accident reports. It still applies to citations. But he's not saying we somehow balance our public records report against the DPPA. There's no balance to be done. If Congress wants to preempt the state on a Commerce Clause power like that, they can do it. That's why it's such a broad power. That's why they have to be clear and manifest when they exercise that intent, because we can't say, well, gee, that's not a good idea, or look at our good policy here, and let's balance them. We don't have that right. Congress has the power. But they have to be clear when they exercise it, and they weren't in the DPPA, except as to DMV records and motor vehicle records.
So does this case have to go back for a balancing?
Not at all.
Why not?
Because we're talking about names and addresses. I mean, they had the opportunity to do that when they denied the request. They don't get repeated kicks at the cat. They denied it for one reason, and one reason alone. The DPPA prohibits it. How are you going to balance away somebody's name when 346.74F says anybody gets to look at an accident report? I don't know what public policy they would cite to say names on accident reports are properly kept secret when they've been public here since 1965.
You know, life has changed a lot since 1965. Circumstances have changed. People had their names and addresses in the telephone book all the time. That's no longer so prevalent. Either being listed or having your address on it, or even telephone numbers. Indeed, public officials are told not to do that, and for safety reasons. And are told not to take the same route home or to the office or wherever, so that if somebody is watching, that they're not able to figure out when and where and how to get you. I mean, it's just things have changed. And so to tell me what happened in the 1960s, I find not keeping up with the times, because much has changed since then. And the balance, if you're relying on the fact that the right reason wasn't given, then that's okay. But then how would you draft the opinion that would properly handle this question as far as the newspaper is concerned?
I would draft it by saying it is not this court's job to decide if this is a good policy. Simply because it was passed in 1965 doesn't make it stale or old. But if it does, that's for the legislature to address. And then I would hold that Congress didn't intend to address that. There's nothing in the DPPA that suggests the prohibition was intended to extend to routine accident reports and citations. Why would they accept that information from the definition of personal information? Why would they not list law enforcement agencies in the prohibition if that was their intent? Congress was not oblivious to how police use motor vehicle records in the course of their duties, and they broadly said law enforcement agencies can continue to perform their routine functions, and their routine function in this state, by law, includes disclosing accident reports, moving citations, and records about driver status that include the driver's name.
I thought the routine function that you were relying on was the public records law, not what they put on these forms. And that because it is the function of the DMV or the city police to release public records, that's the function.
Well, that's right. State law requires this information on these forms. They must fill out the standard motor vehicle accident form. The citation form, which is not in the record because it wasn't among those the newspaper requested, also is a standard form. It doesn't vary from each jurisdiction in the state. Those forms require names and addresses. Legislature wants to forbid their disclosure. It has that power. If the Congress wants to forbid that disclosure, it has that power. Neither of them has, and it's not up to this court to decide they should.
Thank you, Counsel.
Counsel, can you give me your best argument on 2725 sub 3?
There's a definition of personal information, which the newspaper believes the last language does not include information on a vehicle accident, driving violation, or driving status, allows them to get access to personal information. What's the point? If their interpretation is correct, they've swallowed the entire DPPA. The federal law is concerned with information on identities, and it specifically says personal information such as your name and address. And in this case, it did also involve driver's license numbers that were redacted, date of birth, telephone number. I point out that Dahlstrom case earlier from the Seventh Circuit, where just a few months ago they said it also includes your height and your weight and your eye color. None of that falls within vehicular accidents, driving violations, or driving status. What did Congress mean? It meant things like, is someone revoked, suspended? How many accidents have there been at this intersection? They didn't mean to create a privacy statute and says it protects personal information like date of birth and eye colors and your height and weight and your social security number. Oh, but by the way, we're now going to cut that out. That makes absolutely no sense. And I really don't think that Tracy Morgan would find the position of New Richmond News very funny. Congress was deeply concerned with informational privacy. Numerous witnesses testified regarding the grave consequences of open access to governmental records. Congress was fully aware of how people got these records, how they got personal information. Personal information didn't fall out of the sky.
Do you intend, then, with the 14 exceptions, and you, in your earlier argument, advanced a more restrained or nuanced approach. I'm not sure if nuanced was your word, but I think restrained was your word.
Correct.
And I took from that the reports, the people who are being requested to release the reports are going to have to look and see if any exception is being claimed and if it's validly being claimed. Is that what you are advancing for a restrained approach?
That's correct.
Besides being an assistant city attorney, I also at one time was an assistant clerk of courts in a small county, Richland County. Do you have any idea how many, I can't remember, but it's like hundreds we have to deal with on Tuesday mornings getting these parking violations and these police reports and stuff processed to DMV. What is the load? What are the consequences on people who are in police departments, you know, and their staff or other folks and their, like the clerk of courts, of having to give this information over? What's the consequence? What's the ramifications of your...
Well, sure they're going to be burdened. And I think that's really a discussion for another day with our assembly men and women as to whether this needs to be addressed through the open records law. But that's not really the issue in this case. It's really an issue for another day.
It may be for another day, but I like to have in mind consequences. What are the ramifications of the...
A requester is going to have to come in and say, this is the permitted use, this is my explanation, I fall within this permissible use. The custodian is going to have to take a look at that. If they fall within that use, bingo, they get the record unredacted. If they come in and they say, I refuse to identify myself, I want personal information in a motor vehicle record, that custodian is probably going to have to redact, as the City of New Richmond Police Chief did in this case. Is that a burden? Sure. But our custodians face burdens every single day. They face burdens.
These are large numbers. Originally, Carl Sagan kind of numbers.
It's part of the duties of the record. You know, they say it's a function to produce public records. Sure, but there's many functions. One of the other functions is to maintain the records. Another function is to pass them down to your successor to preserve them. And another function, which we all talk about in here in all the cases and all the media, is the burdens of redacting. But that's one of your functions as a custodian. So they cannot come in here and say, as the Attorney General said, well, let's look at B1 and say that's a gaping loophole in the law. It's a function to produce records. That's only a half-truth. It's also a function to obey federal and state laws and to redact and remove personal information where appropriate. I see that my time is up, but if there's any final question, I'd be happy to answer it. Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you very much for a very spirited argument of the intersection of state law, federal law, and something which for years we haven't had a chance to look at. So we very much appreciate you bringing it to our attention. Your briefs were both excellent, and your arguments were very, very interesting and very spirited, even with the cheese standing alone. So a little bit of humor is always good. It makes us pay attention carefully to what you're saying to us, that's for sure. Thank you so much. We will now take a break until our afternoon case begins at 1:30. Thank you. We are adjourned.